What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's been a lot of rhetoric, a lot of chest pounding about whether or not we should use military action against Mexican drug cartels. And having read a lot about the operations of the drug cartels in Mexico and the difficulties that the Mexican government has had dealing with the cartels, I was always kind of curious as to how we would go about executing Sane. Brandon Buck joins us, research fellow in foreign policy studies at the Cato Institute, who recently authored an article called Invading Mexico Will Not Solve the Cartel Problem. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Very interesting article. You kind of lay it out historically about a number of operations that were done. You know, I think back to the typical product eradication when it was marijuana or cocaine, and now it's something entirely different that's synthetic and it's made in labs. And it just seems that they're not as obvious as to who they are, what they are, and where they are as they maybe once were in today's world. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so, you know, fentanyl is created synthetically. As you say, it's created in labs. And so this presents a particularly difficult problem for intelligence gathering on these kinds of operations, because whether it's marijuana or traditional opiates, you know, these have large visual signatures that you can either identify through, you know, human asset collection or satellite collection. That isn't the case with fentanyl. And so it makes it far more discreet, therefore difficult to track and interdict.
And you actually engage in two types of different challenges too, right? Or warfare, urban and rural, which is very difficult. And again, much like we experienced in Afghanistan and in the Middle East, who's the enemy? They're not readily apparent, are they?
No, they're not. I mean, particularly for the cartels, I mean, they control large tracts of territory in Mexico. They also operate in urban areas where a lot of these fentanyl labs are. Of course, they don't wear uniforms and the like. You know, they are a regular force, just like the Taliban or ISIS. And also, they're firmly integrated into the local population in a way that those groups also were. So, you know, tracking them would be difficult, but also striking at them would be as difficult, considering how integrated they are in the local population. And, you know, despite their obvious violent nature, you know, there are some pockets of Mexico that see them as a legitimate government authority, and therefore have them owe to them some sort of loyalty. So striking at them would also be difficult from that angle as well.
Has the designation of them as FTOs, foreign terrorist organizations, exacerbated this problem or made it easier?
Well, I mean, it's too early to tell. I mean, the the Trump administration just put that order in a few days ago. It'll give the the Treasury Department some other avenues to confiscate certain money and those kinds of things. But as far as having a direct impact in Mexico, it's too early to tell. But I mean, there's one aspect of that. However, if they are branded as terrorist organizations, then violence that befalls Mexican citizens would give them a element of amnesty claims here in the United States. So this could, ironically enough, exacerbate one of the issues that the Trump administration is trying to get under control.
I know you've heard in a number of circles, and it's reflected in your article about special operations forces operating, inside of Mexico. Is that a strategy? It seems as though even those that are talking about it have some doubt as to whether or not that's a strategy that can be successfully executed.
Yeah, there's been certainly a lot of bluster on this issue, and I think those who propose it take for granted that special operation forces, when they operated in places like Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan, they did so in areas that were a permissive environment, meaning that the conventional U.S. military had a large footprint, and or the U.S. government had agreements with the local host government. So therefore, special forces were able to conduct their operations without having to worry about large maneuver forces of the enemy moving in on them, because they had copious air assets, intelligence collection platforms like UAVs, drones, and also large conventional forces that could be used to interdict insurgent forces and therefore prevent some kind of catastrophe or large firefight. That situation would not exist in Mexico, because the Mexican government has already said that they're not going to abide by this. And so if the U.S. government starts to send small special forces teams, special operations forces usually operate in teams as small as 8 to 12 or as large as maybe 30, you could put them into a position in which they could be overexposed without sufficient support. And then that would open up the door for a particularly bad outcome, in which those small forces would be operating in environments with equally sized, fairly well-armed forces of their own.
And the criminal element there has permeated the national police force, military as well in Mexico, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, and this would be a huge problem. This would be a significant problem with intelligence gathering, right? Because part of finding and fixing and destroying or capturing high value targets would be to go in beforehand and do some kind of intelligence gathering. But if the local government is corrupted through and through, it will be very difficult, if not impossible, to create those partnerships with local intelligence organizations in order to generate those leads. And then you would have to rely on other things like UAVs or drones and those kinds of technical collection assets. But those aren't perfect either. And then you would run into the same problems that we had in Afghanistan of having a certain level of fidelity on targets. And then that could open up all kinds of problems with collateral damage and the like.
I recall back in the 80s, I think the guy's name was General Arturo Durazo. You may be familiar with him. He was on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. He was actually the head of the Mexican National Police Force and ran the largest American Express fraud scheme in the world. And they ultimately ended up taking him down. And I remember reading in one of the books, they were talking about how the graph flows uphill there, that almost every transaction that occurred in some of, I don't know if they what they call them, counties or whatever in Mexico, that he had his hand in almost every one of those transactions. There was a percentage that was paid to him. And I can't imagine it's much different today.
No, and I think this is the issue that when people bandy about the idea of using special forces as some kind of easy button, it's going to automatically put us into a escalation spiral in which, as you say, we're not only running up against bona fide members of the cartel, but this whole gray area of government officials who who may or may not be directly involved or might be tangentially involved through some kind of protection racket. And so from the bat, there's going to be a serious diplomatic fallout from this. The Mexican government's not going to abide violations of its sovereignty this way. And so this would immediately axe any of the other important diplomatic things that the Trump administration wants to get accomplished, like controlling the illegal migration or trying to counter Chinese influence in Latin America. Those would go up in smoke if the U.S. government decided to go kinetic in Mexico.
So what would be the best approach? Go after the money? I mean, obviously they're investing in our country, right? I mean, I'm not exactly sure. What would be the best strategy?
Right. I think it depends upon which aspect of this we're talking. I mean, if it's the fentanyl issue itself, very recently there's been a downward tick in opioid deaths. I think getting a handle on like what caused that, if that was a policy outcome, exploring that, double downing on it. And then as far as the law and order issue goes, the violence that is done by the cartels in this country, we could do a more vigorous investigation and prosecution of cartel-related violence to break up those networks here in the United States. And as far as get some sort of handle on the border and try to tamp down as much as possible. But the solutions can't be worse than the problem itself. And I think going into Mexico in this way would almost assuredly do that.
And there's no quick fix, right? I mean, we didn't get to this position overnight. I mean, it was exacerbated somewhat during this most recent administration, but we've got to be able to stay the course on any number of these initiatives far past the current administration, no matter what the next or who the next administration may be.
Yeah, I mean, and there's ultimately going to be no victory in the war on drugs. This country's been fighting it now for half a century. So the best you can do is ameliorate it, try to cut down on opioid deaths and the like. But I think there are certain law and order issues that could be exercised by the Trump administration on this side of the border without risking escalation across the border.
Is this just a lot of bravado chatter, doubling down and seeing what the reaction's going to be?
I mean, it could be. It would certainly fit with the Trump administration's MO, this sort of madman theory that they, this kind of Nixonian, diplomatic tool. So that could very well be it, much like some other aspects of this foreign policy and other it's foreign policy rhetoric and some other areas of the country. So, yes, it could be just rhetoric, but I mean, I'm concerned that that we are creating a kind of permission structure in the mind of the conservative base to imagine this as being, feasible. So I think as a matter of policy, we're about where we were on this issue last year, and there's been some positive developments. President Sheinbaum in Mexico has authorized this deployment of National Guard forces against the border. There are certain steps being taken to get a better handle on the border itself. So, over the next few weeks or months, if those steps have some positive outcomes, maybe we'll tone down a little bit on this particular possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the most recent decision of the reestablishment of Gitmo, right, in Guantanamo Bay. I mean, obviously, there's a huge negative connotation to that, no matter how you look at it, right? That's where we keep the worst of the worst. That's where we kept the terrorists from 9/11 and the whole nine yards. And there is a little bit of an uncertainty and kind of a fear factor that embraces. I kind of look at this other situation along the same lines. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it could be, and I certainly hope that that's all that's going on here is a bit of rhetoric. But there's also been, there's also been actions on this in Congress last year. Representative Dan Crenshaw introduced a authorization for use of military force, on this issue. So It's tough to say right now if this is just Trump waving a big stick, or if this is trying to pave the ground for an actual military incursion.
You make an interesting observation about what the Mexican authorities have done with the cartels, where actually we probably have more, I guess, splinter cartels, for lack of a better term. The more aggressive they got, in some cases, the smaller the cartel groups are. But do we even have an idea as to how many cartel groups exist inside of Mexico today?
Well, yeah, there's about four or five. There was the former, Sinaloa is probably the largest, and then there's CNTG, which is one of the more violent ones, and then there's the Gulf Coast cartels. But even then, they kind of operate as a franchise, so it's difficult to say just how hierarchical the structures really are, and if there is a tight knit network which can be cracked, because as you say. In the previous decades, the Mexican government had no problems taking out leadership of the various cartels. But as they splintered, they got more violent, as usually happens whenever criminal networks are broken up, and it didn't have any noticeable influence on the flow of drugs into the United States. So I think proponents of this idea haven't taken that into account. And when they do, they sort of yada, yada, yada past, what would the steps be in order to achieve success where the Mexican government has failed. And as far as I see, those who were banding this about haven't done that.
Yeah. And going back to what you said before, the fact that this is synthetic in nature and you can set up a lab almost anywhere, they're not very complex, they're not sophisticated, they don't need to be. They become very efficient at what they do. Sky's the limit as it relates to production. And that's the real challenge, right?
Yeah, that's right. Before I was at Cato, before getting my graduate degree, I worked in the intelligence community doing counterinsurgency work in Afghanistan, particularly attached to special operations forces. And a big part of what we were trying to do was trying to track down narcotics smugglers who are affiliated with the Taliban, believing that if we could take them out, we could eliminate the funding sources of the Taliban and therefore have some sort of influence on the battlefield. And spoiler alert, that didn't happen. We could not take these people out fast enough. We could not degrade or destroy the networks fast enough. And that was with traditional opiates. Poppy crops there.
Poppy fields.
Now, the issue in Mexico.
Nothing's more apparent than a poppy field, right?
Yeah, that's right. And you could see like the labs that they would make them there. You could see those from satellites. The problem is even worse than that now in Mexico. As you say, it's because of the synthetic nature. It's far easier to conceal and to move around. And so trying to attack those networks, it would be immeasurably more difficult because of that aspect, but also because of the intelligence problem.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what path they take for certain, and we will check back with you. I spent 40 years in law enforcement, 10 years as an elected sheriff, and this is something I saw in the streets of our community each and every day. It was frustrating. We made a lot of arrests. We eradicated a lot of drugs, but it's still here and there's still some prevalence, and you kind of wonder, it has to be a multi-tiered approach, but you got to be able to stay the course for long periods of time, in my view. And, this kind of piecemeal thing that we always find ourselves in, I don't see a huge ROI there.
That's right, and I would have to agree.
Yeah. Brandon Buck, thank you so much for joining us. Truly appreciate your time, your insight. We will definitely check back with you. Brandon's a research fellow in foreign policy studies at the Cato Institute. Thank you so much, sir, and have a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870. on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll check in with Kevin Dolio, Director of Aviation for the Louis Armstrong New Orleans International Airport, when we return.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Kevin Dolio, Director of Aviation for the Louis Armstrong New Orleans International Airport. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be on, Noel.
Kevin, I got to imagine folks are still trying to get the heck out of Dodge, right?
No, they're pretty much out of Dodge. I'm sitting here now trying to figure out what day it is.
That's how it was for me last.
but yesterday was huge. It was everything expected and then some. It was all that was advertised. We moved through the checkpoint yesterday a little better than 43,000 people. And that's just through the checkpoint. And also we had, I guess you could say we had four different operations going on the airport. So we had the normal processing here in the new terminal with those 43,000 folks through the checkpoint, and the checkpoint and that processing, gosh, from about 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. through a little after 6 yesterday, every hourly count on seats out of here was huge, was well over any normal counts at those hours on any given day of the week during normal operations, even peak operations. So once it started, it just kept building and going and building and going until that evening, starting early morning all the way through the evening. So while that was going on here, we also having the South Terminal Complex and the better pieces of it still up and in play, we processed family and friend charters out of that facility on the outbound side. It was 9 or 10 family and friend charters and then several other charters on different parts of the apron on the south side, including the team departures. So we had those ops going as well. And then, of course, all of the private jet activity, private aircraft activity on the airport through that period. So that was all ongoing and just the mass major exodus all yesterday.
Would that be one of the largest throughput days that you've had?
Absolutely. 43,000 through the checkpoint compared to the previous record was the Taylor Swift concert exodus, 32,000. Wow. So 11,000 folks better than that through the checkpoint. And
so your thoughts on how it went? Obviously, there are delays, right? I mean, because it doesn't matter how much infrastructure you put in when you have 43,000 people that you're moving pretty much for the most part in a 12 to 13 hour span.
Right.
That's massive.
It is. And it just keeps building and building and building. So you see more and more mass as the day moves on with those numbers continuing over those hours. I'll give you a surprising step though, inside the terminal, the TSA checkpoint, and kudos to TSA. TSA, I think I mentioned when we spoke last week that they would have for the first time the full capacity of our common checkpoint up and operating, 17 lanes of screening equipment, all manned through the day. The longest processing time of someone going through the TSA checkpoint yesterday was 28 minutes.
Wow.
And 88% of all passengers were screened in less than 15 minutes, even with the masses of people we saw moving through the facility. So they did a really bang-up, great job in processing folks through the checkpoint. The roadway system with all of the vehicular traffic, of course, given a third mode of very popular ground transportation from airports nationwide, the shared ride van services no longer exist. So now everything is Uber, Uber Lyft, and taxis. And those masses of people moving to and from the airport. As you could imagine, with the added vehicles on the roadway system, it never gridlocked, but there was slow movement through the day, constant movement, but slowly through the roadway systems. So everyone, got here okay. Traffic never stopped, but it was definitely a constant slow roll throughout the day.
And who'd have thought that a game program might have been the biggest challenge that y'all had because it was setting off security machines? You know, when I read the story, I actually have a program, and I pulled it out, and I looked at the, you know, the hologram, and I guess there's metal in it or something. I'm not sure what the process is, but, you know, it's kind of interesting to read that.
Right. And, you know, we, our bang-up team really identified the potential issue prior to the exodus. And we actually pushed out in messages that were going out to the traveling public and press releases we pushed out, advising folks, ensure of their programs, that they should not be in their check baggage to bring them with them in their carry-on bags. And I think the limit, I don't remember the exact number, was one in a carry-on bag or something like that. More than that would set off alarms. And we went a step further. All of the great, and I really give a big thank you to the host committee, the Sports Foundation host committee, and pushing so many volunteers out to the airport to assist. And those volunteers were also at curbside. Those that were assigned curbside were armed with signs advising, and they were mouthing it as well, advising the traveling public as they were coming into the terminal. If you have programs from the game, this is what you need to do. And so that warning, that message was going out constantly to the traveling public returning to the airport from the game.
Sounds like TSA is going to have a meeting with NFL before the next Super Bowl about hologram covers on programs to me.
So no metal in the programs, right?
No attachment to the it's a beautiful program, I have to tell you. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it. It's gorgeous.
Yes, it is.
But, I mean, when I read it, I said, my God, what next? I mean, you know, you just never think about these things, right? I mean, but it was only on the check baggage side that it created a problem?
Well, if you had more than one in your carry-on bag, from what I understand, it could set off those alarms as well. And so we didn't want them checked in check baggage. We were trying to get folks to bring them along in their carry-on bags, but not more than one in a carry-on bag. Somehow separate them out if you had multiple.
So today, back to normal?
Back to normal. I mean, just like that, you flip a switch and it's back to a normal operation. Just to give you a number, we pushed over 43,000 folks through the checkpoint yesterday. We only have 21,000 people on the books today. So, and that's pretty much for Tuesday. That's a normal size day. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, 19,000 to 21,000 is normal.
And I don't imagine that there were any flights in the immediate aftermath of the game that were leaving late Sunday night, right? Or were there?
No, I think
other than
everyone
privates.
Pretty well. Now, if anyone stayed longer, you know, on their own decision to spend an extra day or two, then they're just meshed into the normal ops today. There's no airline extra sections like there were yesterday. They're back to their normal schedule. There's no charters or anything like that. So anyone that spent an extra day or two is just flying out on the regularly scheduled flights out of the market.
This is a little bit off subject, Kevin, but I think you can handle it. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about ATCs, air traffic controllers. Obviously, you've been around a long time in the aircraft business. That's the bloodline to safety and security in the air, right? Managing that traffic coming in. Where do you guys stand?
We hear, let's talk the system first, and we're in good shape here. The system needs a large number of air traffic controllers brought on board over the next couple of years, hopefully to meet their normal staffing and needs in air traffic control towers and centers around the country. The FAA, I know, is very aggressively out hiring, had a big hire through last year, still a long way to go, but they've been very aggressive at that, and I anticipate and fully expect that they'll fill or solve the shortage of air traffic controllers in short order. Now, short order being a year or two, because it's a big number. They're plugging, but believe me, they've been very aggressive and have brought a large number of controllers on board over the past year or two, and that will continue. Here, we've not run into any real issues here in terms of staffing and so forth in our control tower, which is good and a blessing for us. But not that there's any deterioration of safety or anything of that nature anywhere in the country. It's just they're short, yes. Are they filling the needs? Yes. Do you need to, in an expeditious manner, go out and fill the shortages? Yeah, you absolutely have to, and that's ongoing.
And you need succession, you know, a certain amount of succession planning going on with, you know, because you have departures, people that are leaving the employ of, you know, the organization. Now, our tower has, correct me if I'm wrong, is relatively new, all things considered, and we do have some of the latest technology there, right?
We do. It's the tower, you might recall in the mid-90s, when we were demolishing piece by piece and rebuilding piece by piece the Sea Concourse and the old terminal, the old tower was at the head of that concourse. So it had to be demolished and relocated in the process as well. And we got a brand new tower constructed at that point with all the latest technology in it. So we're in good shape in terms of the facility itself. And it is fairly new, relatively speaking.
Yeah, because there are a lot busier airports, but with a lot older towers than ours, right?
That's true. That is very true. Yes.
Well, congratulations. You made it. It's record-setting. 43,000 through the checkpoint yesterday in a brief period of time. That's a big number. I'm sure there, you know, were some examples of delays and the like. That's a typical day in the flying world around the world, not just in this country. And
it's true.
We know you've been busy, and thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much for having us. And if I could say one thing, Newell, real quickly.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
If I could thank all of our staff and all of the airport stakeholders, the airlines, concessionaires, TSA, all of the safety personnel, FAA, for all of the effort and planning over the past year and to pull through this successfully. Big kudos to them, and also thanks to our community partners with the host committee, City of New Orleans, and our local and state agencies. Just had to thank everybody because it was a huge team effort, and this region showed up in a big, beautiful way across the country. I'm just
no
very
doubt.
Proud.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Kevin Dolio, Director of Aviation for the Louis Armstrong New Orleans International Airport. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. The administration, U.S. administration, Donald Trump's administration, announces that they are on their way back. An envoy was visiting Russian authorities with Mark Fogel, an American school teacher who was arrested in August of 2021 by Russian authorities for trying to enter Russia with less than an ounce of medical marijuana. He was sentenced to 14 years in prison in June of 2022, and they've been able to secure his release from Russian authorities. We covered a lot of territory today, from what went on at the airport, setting a new record of 43,000 individuals going through the checkpoint in pretty much 12 to 14 hours. That's a huge number, new record there. About 11,000 more than the concert with Taylor Swift. We visited with Brandon Buck, this talk about invading Mexico and in order to, with our military, in order to take down the cartels. That'll be a lot more difficult than what a lot of people think. Tariffs, the impact that they have on our economy, what is going to happen to inflation, where are these inflationary numbers? A lot of the steel industry here domestically have already raised their prices as a result of the tariffs that's being placed on foreign steel and aluminum workers. Also, American Heart Month this month, we visited with the executive director, and also we visited with the former board member, Nick Carl, to tell his side of the story of the board members that were removed by the Archbishop from the Second Harvest Food Bank and what went on there. It was a very interesting conversation with Nick Carl as well. So we'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. We'll check in with Scoot to see what he has coming your way in just a minute. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Scoot. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about Kendrick Lamar because, you know, more information and more comments have come in. Also, you know, there's a lot being said about Taylor Swift being booed at the Super Bowl. And, you know, the president was cheered, and that's understandable. But, you know, it just goes to show you that politics and music have now really interfaced. The booing of Taylor Swift was really all about politics. So we'll talk about all of that coming up on the show. And also, Kid Rock got PO'd at the audience at Jon Bon Jovi's bar in Nashville, and he walked off the stage. They weren't clapping enough, so he just walked off the stage and said something I can't say on the air.
All righty, Scoot's headed your way. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you in the morning.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.